This episode was recorded on Wednesday, December 7th, 2022, at 3 p.m. PST. Things may have changed by the time you're listening to this. And if you want more, follow us on Instagram at Sunset Politics. That's Sunset Politics on Instagram. Now on with the show.
The youth simply will not buy the world that the elders have given them. They see too much hypocrisy in it. They see too many things that is wrong with it. And I think that the elders are going to have to realize that they simply can no longer browbeat youth into following its established path.
Welcome back to Sunset Politics. Finally, after a long time absent, we're back to talk about some of the stuff that we've missed. There was a whole election that happened. Lots of other things that have happened. So we're gonna catch you up to speed on that. But first, how has it been going, everyone?
Hi, everybody. This is Molly. School has been very hectic. We have finals coming up. Story, what about you?
Yeah, I am in my finals week right now. I had one on Monday. I have another one on Friday. We're recording this on Wednesday, and I basically have nothing to do between Monday and Friday, but I'm still in town. So we figured we'd record. My first final went really well. I'm really proud. That class is, it was Intro to IR, International Relations. A lot of people told me I was the only reason they were passing that class. So,
oh my gosh.
I kind of felt a lot of pressure to do well in the final, but I think I did. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I'm actually taking that class next quarter. So, I'm hoping that it will be interesting. I'm very excited about it.
Well, let me know if you need any help. It's probably two totally different classes, but I mean, I know the stuff. So,
thank you, Story. Should we introduce our guest for the day?
Yeah.
All right. So today we have Leif Severson back on. Some of you may remember hearing him talk about statues and a lot of other issues. I think that was back in July. So if anybody's interested in hearing his other episode, please feel free to check it out. Leif, do you want to introduce yourself? Like, just talk about, I don't know, what your major is and how your finals are going.
Yeah. So hi, my name is Leif. You might remember my voice, but you might remember my paper more. So what my major is right now is political science, but I'm thinking about political economy because that was one of the classes that I took this quarter, and it was really interesting. I really like the concepts. Politics and the market go together to create something that's really important to our everyday life and how we can use those concepts to explain what we do.
Very nice. Yeah, so Leif is back to talk about some current events, like we mentioned earlier. We have some really interesting things to talk about today, from the midterms to Kanye West and Nick Fuentes' meeting with Donald Trump, to the families of the officers at the January 6th riot being given the Congressional Gold Medal and their reaction to that. So we have a lot of interesting topics to cover. So should we jump into it?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, so first thing, midterm elections. They happened. Our last episode, we were telling you to vote. It seems like a lot of you did, because there was an election. It was prophesized, sort of, to be a heavy Republican win, and it wasn't. That's usually what happens in midterms, as I think Obama called it. It's usually a shellacking for the party in power. But it wasn't this time. Democrats actually retained and actually gained a seat in the Senate thanks to the runoff that finished just like yesterday. Senator Raphael Warnock held on to a seat. He's one of my favorite senators right now, so I'm really glad. Republicans did win the House of Representatives, but by a very narrow margin. So there's been lots of chatter about why this was. and what Republicans could do with the House. So, yeah, what do you think?
I think it's really interesting just how it ended up splitting off. I think I was surprised, at least in the House, by how the Democrats ended up losing about 9 seats, just because I think a lot of people have started to vote blue a lot more just because of what was happening with Donald Trump and the Republican Party, especially following January 6th. So it was very interesting to see a lot of those seats being swept up by Republicans. But some more exciting races in the Senate. In Arizona, Senator Catherine Cortez Masto beat Republican Adam Lavalt, I believe is how you say his name. So that's a pretty big deal. And then in Pennsylvania, the Lieutenant Governor, John Fetterman, beat the Trump-endorsed Dr. Oz. So that's really interesting and definitely a big victory. Leif, anything you want to add?
Nope, I don't think there's anything that I'm...
Yeah, I think one of the big stories of this election was that election deniers lost, and people that were super against abortion ended up losing. But outside of that, Republicans actually did fairly well. The Roe v. Wade thing ended up helping Democrats because people are overwhelmingly like more pro-choice than you would think. And also people don't like that democracy might get overturned. So they voted against the election deniers. I think Carrie Lake lost. I think she was running for Arizona governor. Gretchen Whitmer held on to her seat in Michigan. I believe she was running against an election denier. Like you said, Oz lost. I'm not sure if Oz was like an election denier, but I think he was. He was Trump endorsed at least. So
yeah.
The Trump candidates ended up losing.
Yes. I think another important race that, though it's not a like U.S. Congress race, was really interesting was in Oregon. Tina Kotek ended up winning the
gubernatorial
gubernatorial election. Thank you. And that was a really close race at one point a little bit just because Christine Drazen was starting to, I think at one point it was like only like a few points apart. And then once they started counting the votes from Multnomah County in Portland, she ended up being able to get ahead. But I think that race was very interesting for a lot of Oregonians because I think when people think of Oregon, they think it's very blue and often I think don't realize that there are actually a decent amount of Republicans or people who will vote Republican in the state. So I don't know. Like I had a hard time in that election, I think, with deciding who was a good candidate, but I think Tina Kotek will definitely do the best and do what's best for Oregon, and you know she's a champion for pro-choice and just a lot of the values that I think a lot of Oregonians definitely stand by.
Yeah, the big story in that race was that there was an independent, Betsy Johnson, that ran and took about like 8% of the vote or so, who used to be a Democrat but was a more conservative Democrat, and so decide to split from the party. We talked about the selection a few episodes ago. It was definitely close. I think 538 had it at almost 50-50, just barely favoring Kotek the night before. And just full disclosure, I did do some volunteering for her campaign. So I do like a lot of Tina Kotek's messaging, and you're never going to have a perfect politician, but I think she's pretty darn good.
Definitely. That's really cool that you did that. I think that getting involved, no matter how that, whatever that looks like, is really important. I did some phone banking for one of the measures that was trying to be passed in one of the cities in Oregon. And we had a lot of very mean people, but I think it definitely paid off because there was some people that were like, oh, I actually am just sitting down to vote right now. Like, I'll keep that in mind and whatnot. And it ended up passing. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Should we move on to the presidential elections for 2024, or you want to add anything else?
I think I want to talk a bit more about the midterms because it's a pretty big deal. Mm-hmm. First, I wanted to share a bit of a funny story more about the Oregon governor's race. I put a Tina Kotek sign up on my dorm room door. I'm not sure if I told you this, but I don't think I've told it on the podcast. But I put a Tina Kotek sign on my door. Someone tore it down, ripped it in half. And so I was like, okay, I accept this challenge. I put up another one and I put a note saying, whoever tore down the last sign, see you on November 8th. and they wrote like back, like, I bet. And then on November 8th, or I think it was like the day after when the AP finally called the race, I like put up a bunch more signs and was like, the good people who are going to have spoken. So that felt pretty good.
That's awesome. I love that.
But yeah. Another big thing is Republicans do have control of the House, which means they do have maybe not all the power they want, but they do have a lot of power. The biggest one is control of committees and investigations. So the January 6th committee is almost certainly just going to be extinguished. They've done most of their work already, but it's basically just going to be gotten rid of. One of the big people involved in that lost her seat also, Liz Cheney. So that's kind of unfortunate. I'm sure we'll talk about that more later in the episode. But also, they have investigation power, which means they can essentially like launch investigations into whoever they want. And they also have the power of impeachment. So there have been people like Marjorie Taylor Greene that are saying, we're going to impeach Biden. Of course, they can't actually like remove him from office because they need the Senate, which is still controlled by Democrats. So it's not really going to mean much, but the House could impeach Biden for, I don't know, whatever they want. I mean, I certainly disagree with a lot of what he's done, but I don't think he's done anything like impeachable. So
no, definitely not. Yeah, it's like I don't like him personally, but I don't think he has done anything that is impeach worthy. But that's just me. But I heard that. Do you know, did Marjorie Taylor Greene win? Was it the prime? No, she won the midterm election, right? Against, I think there was a guy who was maybe younger who was running for her spot, but she still ended up beating him.
Yeah, I think Greene won. I think the one that was really close was Lauren Boebert, who was like, who almost lost, but I think she ended up winning. But that race was really close for a long time. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Greene's district is like very, very Republican, but she won. Yeah.
I know that one of the things that she ran on was that she said, like the first thing I'll do is impeach Biden.
Yeah.
Which was a really interesting one. Big victory, I would also say, is Madison Cawthorn did not get reelected.
Yeah.
And he gave like a whole speech, I believe, about masculinity, like as like his last like hurrah, you could say, in Congress, in the House. So very interesting.
Yeah. Big talk about masculinity for someone whose name is Madison. That's like a girl's name. Can't be very masculine at all. I'm just kidding, of course. But
very interesting. I'm also curious to see how this will, I guess, play out down the road too with the election in 2024. Just because also, I mean, this kind of has to do with midterms, but also not really. But I know that there's been some kind of feud going on a little bit between Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis, which is really interesting. So,
oh God, Trump's
kind of curious.
Ron DeSanctimonious, that's going in the record books. That's amazing. That's what Trump called him. I just think that's very funny. Trump is basically, he went after like Glenn Youngkin. And he basically said, your name sounds like a Chinese name. That's bad. That's like, Trump is insane.
That is just like wild. Speaking of, is there anything else you want to say? Sorry.
No. We can go into what you're thinking.
Okay. Yeah. So since we're on the topic of Donald Trump, I don't know if anybody saw who's listening. I actually watched this live, and it was quite disappointing. I was in my student senate meeting and saw that it was on the news and immediately had to see what was going on. So Donald Trump hosted a little private party at Mar-a-Lago last month, so in November, and he announced that he will be running officially, like confirmed that he'll be running for the Republican Party, or like that he wants to try to get the Republican endorsement in 2024. And obviously a lot of people saw this coming, but I think that it's harder when you hear it, like, I guess, like, confirmed. Like, I know for me, at least, I was really disappointed. And though I really hope he does not have any chance, I feel like, I know, like, a friend of mine was saying on their story, like, people don't realize, like, Ron DeSantis might, it, like, is just as, like, some people think he's just as bad and, like, don't realize that he also is, like, a front runner. So I think it's just so scary how you have these, like, radicalized members of the Republican Party who are running to represent the country and, like, could make some really, really awful decisions regarding just basic human rights, I feel like, because a lot of them, like, don't support, like, marriage equality or, like, right to have a choice regarding abortion. So I think that that's really scary, and I don't know. I can just see them creating a lot of problems.
Yeah. Ron DeSantis, for those that don't know, governor of Florida, he's probably also going to run. I don't think he's officially announced it yet, but like on the campaign trail, his opponent asked him, if you win, can you commit to serving out a full 4-year term as governor? And he like, he basically just like smiled and like didn't answer the question, which kind of implies that he's going to run for president and thus leave his office as governor. But he is the one behind the Don't Say Gay bill and lots of other bills. There was recently like a I think it's called like the Stop Woke Act, where they basically defined, like, you basically, like, made it illegal to teach woke things in school, which they defined as, like, anything that says that there are, like, systemic inequalities that need to be addressed. So he's literally trying to make it so you can't talk in schools about systemic inequality, which is pretty bad. You know, he's kind of been silent on the election denying issue, which, I mean, obviously Trump hasn't. But both these people are would be, I think, really bad for the country if either of them won. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add?
Well, we could talk about the other thing that was in the news recently. Yes. With Trump, which is his organization got found guilty of tax fraud. Yes. They didn't indict him himself, but like it's literally been found by a court of law that his organization was sanctioning tax fraud.
Yes.
Yeah.
So two entities controlled by the Trump Organization were found guilty on 17 counts of criminal tax fraud and falsifying business records. This is from NPR. And the max penalty that they will receive is $1.6 million. And in a statement, the Trump Organization criticized the verdict and said that they would appeal. And they argued that the blame should fall on the company's executives and not on the firm itself, so not on the Trump Organization itself. And this is like the quote that they said. So the notion that a company could be held responsible for an employee's actions to benefit themselves on their own personal tax returns is simply preposterous, the statement read. And Alan Weisselberg, I believe is his name, is the former CFO. And he actually took a plea deal and he pled guilty to 15 felony tax charges and agreed to testify truthfully and serve 5 months in jail. So some of the people responsible have taken accountability, not necessarily for the right reasons, but they have agreed to admit their guilt and testify. But President Trump or former President Trump's lawyers and a lot of the other people who are involved in the Trump Organization have really tried to deflect a lot of the blame from him and really just tried to blame it on the other executives that were involved, which is really kind of silly.
Yeah. If you're in charge of the organization, then, like, I mean, you hire all these people. Like, Trump is absolutely, like, at fault for this in a colloquial sense, even if he hasn't been legally found guilty of anything. But it's certain to come up against him, and it'll be interesting to see how much the Republicans care. It seems like they've, in at least in recent years, sort of stopped caring about the people that they elect doing bad things. So, yeah.
I do think that it's really good that the Justice Department is actually getting these, is actually kind of like getting, like, showing that corporations aren't above the law. Because I think that in recent history, specifically in like 21st century history, it's shown that corporations can get away with a lot. and they can just like have like one fall guy to take it. But then I think this shows that like we're working towards actually holding those companies responsible for when they commit fraud and steal money.
Yeah. And I believe this was this is New York State, not the Justice Department. But the Justice Department is going to be getting criminal referrals from the January 6th committee for Trump for obstructing acts of Congress and obstruction of justice, I believe. So that's good to see.
Yes, very good to see. It's about time.
Yeah.
Should we touch on, since we have so much to talk about former President Trump, should we touch on his dinner?
Yeah.
Leif, do you want to kind of give us a little bit of background on this, or do you want? Okay.
His very interesting dinner with some very interesting guests. One of them is Kanye West, who has, in the past month, made his name he has said some very anti-Semitic remarks, and he has lost a lot of business deals because of that. And he's also, one of the guests was also Nick Fuentes, who I'm like 90% sure is a self-proclaimed white supremacist who has said that he is very much against interracial marriage, gay marriage, and having like birth control and all these like things readily available to the populace.
He also, as a quote unquote joke, but it was not a joke, denied that the Holocaust ever happened, mm-hmm. which is a very, 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 very serious thing to say, and that's not okay. And yeah. the Holocaust did happen.
And Ye basically just said it without joking. I'm sure you guys have all seen the clips, but Kanye West has sort of gone off the deep end. Been just about as anti-Semitic as you can. I don't think we need to like show any particular clips. You can go look some of them up. Particularly his Joe Rogan experience. Or not Joe Rogan, Alex Jones. He was on Alex Jones's show, and like Alex Jones like was like looking afraid of him, like, dude, even I won't say that. And Alex Jones is we've talked about him on the show a few times. He's pretty crazy. So yeah, it's just it worries me that Trump is meeting with one of the largest, anti-Semites right now, and one of the big leaders of like the sort of modern day white supremacist movement, Nick Fuentes, who was one of the like big thought leaders behind the January 6th riot. He was there and he brought like a lot of his people there. It sets a very dangerous precedent, I think. This is like literally someone who's now a presidential candidate who is like meeting with these like crazy people. Yeah.
And I think in like similar news, like Kyrie Irving, just like, I think he got like, because he got put on like maybe temporary or like leave from the, I think the Knicks because of he retweeted something that was very anti-Semitic. It was like this documentary, this very disproved documentary about how, I think it has a title that I shouldn't say the full name of, but like he retweeted it and then got suspended from the Knicks and then. No, not Knicks, the Nets. And I think he's going to be coming back soon. So that's also really interesting.
Yeah, I think he said, like, I remember, like, hearing a headline or something that, like, his suspension was basically already over. Yeah, it's just, like, no consequences, really.
Yeah, I was just looking into that. I hadn't heard about that yet. That's really just... I just don't understand why people, like, what people think they're going to gain from saying such hateful things, because it's just, like, it's so disrespectful, and what they're saying is so untrue and just really does not need to be said. And I think what's also unfortunate about a lot of what specifically Kanye West is saying is people are giving him a platform, and he's saying these things. And, like, obviously people should know that he's saying... like the awful things, but also like when you publish them online, you're just giving him a platform to say more, because he's getting, I don't want to say hype, but he's getting a lot of attention, and I think he's using that attention to say a lot more awful things, which really it should, like, they should be promoting, like, the opposite instead of, like, hateful speech.
Yeah, when you're like someone who is that popular, that has that much influence on people, you have a duty to not be anti-Semitic, like, at the very least. Like, yeah, there's a responsibility that comes with fame. I think we've seen lots of people sort of abdicate that responsibility.
Definitely. Anything else you want to add?
Nope.
Anything all right. else?
Want to talk about Peru?
Yeah, let's do. Yeah, we should move into international relations,
so,
things that are going on.
Just this morning, the president of Peru, Pedro Castillo, said basically the Congress was scheduled to vote on, I think, like his third impeachment proceeding today. He basically said, I'm dissolving the Congress. And then Congress was like, no, we're actually going to meet sooner and impeach you. You're getting dissolved. And then basically, like, his entire government resigned and they impeached him and he's no longer a president. So, yeah, the story behind this is actually really interesting. The Castillo was, he ran for, I think he's like the first president from like the rural areas of Peru ever. He's like also like the fifth president in like 5 years, because all the presidents keep getting like impeached for corruption. He ran on like a I'm going to be against corruption platform, and then he basically wasn't, like, he was just as corrupt as like everyone else that had been there before. And then there were like two impeachment proceedings that failed. There were massive protests against him for failing to handle rising gas prices, which are happening all over the world, not just in America. And then he finally was going to get impeached again, and that basically got sped up because of the whole I'm gonna illegally like take over the government by dissolving Congress thing. So yeah, what do you think?
I mean, I guess one thing that I think is really interesting about with Peru is that they were able to, I was reading earlier, like, they were able to swear in the new president, it looks like. Yeah. And it was a woman, female president, which I thought was really interesting. Because has Peru had a female president before? Do you know?
I'm not sure. No, I think she's the first.
That is so cool.
She was the vice president, now the president. Yeah, I think that's really cool.
Oh, wait, sorry. So was she not sworn in as president, and she was sworn in as vice president?
No, she was the vice president under Castillo, and now she's
that
president.
Makes sense.
Because
because after he tried to dissolve Congress, is that when they removed him and swore her in? Okay,
yeah,
that's what
they were planning to do it like later in the day, and then he was like, to avoid that, he tried to dissolve them, and then his entire government quit, basically.
And it was because they thought he was trying to stage a coup, right, as well?
Well, the coup was like the dissolving Congress, not Parliament, sorry.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's what was referred to as a coup. He was just going to get impeached for corruption because he was corrupt, basically.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I did some like basic reading about Peruvian politics, and there's a pretty interesting history. So for a long time, they were run by the dictatorship of this guy, Alberto Fujimori, who is essentially like, he was very authoritarian, but a lot of people like him because he like made the trains run on time, so to speak. He like improved their economy. It's like the classic example, along with the he's basically like an example that like neoliberals usually point to as like a authoritarianism to put through like economic policies that are better for everyone is like the best way to go. But he did a lot of like bad things, like crimes against humanity and stuff in his fighting against some rebels. And he was actually, I think he was the first ever president to be extradited back to his home country and tried for war crimes and convicted. And he's still in jail to this day. Although I think there's like a plan to there's like some president a few years ago tried to pardon him, basically. So it's an interesting story that I'd recommend doing more reading into if you're interested in. I only had a bit of time to read about it this morning because this all happened literally the day we're recording this. So, yeah. But yeah, basically, since then, like the person that Castillo was running against in like 2021 in the election was his daughter, Fujimori's daughter, who's still around, basically running on his platform, essentially, saying, I'm going to do what this guy did. And Castillo ended up winning and then ended up just being another incredibly corrupt politician. It's a sad story that seems to happen in a lot of Latin American countries where you'll see someone rise to power against corruption as their platform, and then they just end up being corrupt. It's unfortunate, but Peru's Congress seems to be sort of taking the initiative and rooting out that corruption. So that's good to me, I think. There is another dimension of this story, though, and that is that Fujimori, Keiko Fujimori, the daughter of Alberto, who lost the election, basically claimed that it was like a fraudulent election that without really any proof. And so Castillo has basically been saying that like this person's party has essentially been like raising these false corruption charges to attack me. But it seems like from what I've read, the corruption charges are pretty strong. So yeah, it's there's a lot of dimensions to it. But I think at the end of the day, I think it's pretty obvious that Castillo was trying to essentially do a coup by dissolving Congress, and Congress probably made the right decision to remove him. So that's good in my mind.
Since we're on the topic of international news, should we talk about Germany as well?
Yeah, I think Leif wanted to talk about this one.
Yeah, so in Berlin, there were 25 suspects that were essentially trying to coup the Berlin government or the German government by marching on the Reichstag, which sounds very familiar if you've heard anything about history. And among the detained there were a former right-wing politician, an active soldier, like former members of the police and special forces. So they're a very trained group and very experienced group in right-wing politics. So if that coup had gone through, it would have ended terribly. So the plan was to storm the Reichstag in Berlin and arrest the parliament members and appoint a far-right parliament. So not too dissimilar for the plan for January 6th, which is pretty interesting. And it seems that there were a lot of similarities between that, because the prosecutors said that the group was influenced by QAnon and another German conspiracy theory type organization called the Reichsbürger, which is essentially their belief is that after World War II, the Allied government that was put in place is not real, and it was a corporation set up by the West to, I guess, get rid of the German people or something like that. So they essentially believe that the Reich still exists and it's still a thing. And maybe this goal was to, like, coup the government, create the Fourth Reich. And there are also thoughts of maybe Russian interference, because Prince Heinrich of Rus, which is a place in Germany, tried to make contact with Russia through the Russian embassy in Berlin. And he did actually contact a Russian citizen named Natalia B, of which prosecutors still don't know if that's the actual name of the person. But Natalia B is a Russian citizen living in Moscow, so they did make contact there. And although Russia says that this problem is German internal and they didn't do anything to cause that, but I think the past 2 years have shown that I don't know if we can trust anything that comes out of the Kremlin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And also one of the things they were going to do is they would sabotage the electrical networks in Berlin and use like satellite phones to communicate. So this is a very well-organized attempt to overthrow the government. And the police, the German police, like raided like 150 homes across Germany because they dispersed like 3,000 policemen to raid 150 homes and arrest like 25 people.
Wow, that's crazy. Thank you for all that information.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That is great. That's crazy that... Okay, this is like very off topic, but that reminds me of when I don't remember what group they were part of, but those guys tried to overthrow the governor of Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, like just like how it was like organized and how they got caught. Like, it's just so scary.
Idaho. Huh? Was
it Idaho? Well, maybe there was one in Idaho too, but there was one in Michigan as well, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Governor Gretchen Whitmer.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, she got kidnapped. But yeah, I think Germany's had problems like this. I remember like reading some story like a year or so ago about like far right infiltration of the military. It's literally the country where the Nazis were. So you wouldn't be surprised that there's a lot of far right people still there. I can't imagine like what would have happened had that coup succeeded. That would have been a huge like turnover geopolitically. Because Germany is obviously a very big influence on the European Union. A lot of people say that the European Union is essentially just like backed up by Germany, which is not entirely true, but like they're definitely a big influence. So like Germany falling to a far right coup would be huge.
And this is like by far the biggest like thing the German government has, the biggest far right like event that the German government has had to experience. They have had problems like before since like 2002 with like the underground National Socialists like bombing immigrant communities and targeting them, and also like attacking synagogues. And I think in maybe it was like a couple years ago, a German official was attacked by this underground National Socialists like group. So
that's really interesting.
Yeah. Far right movements, like we see in America, they're a global problem. They're out there everywhere.
It's interesting, like again, like the parallels you can see. Like I was talking about with like Michigan and Germany, even like just how all these things, like I don't know what the right word is, but they just exist everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Oh yeah, and like I mentioned before, Prince Heinrich, who was going to be the head of state. Was arrested this morning, I think, or a couple days ago.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
And I was going to be tried for, like, pretty much, like, proposing this whole thing and being part of the underground movement. It was all online also. There's, like, a lot of members. It was all organized online, which is really organized. Like, yeah.
That's not very smart, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Also, like, that's, like, just because it's now a record.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very incriminating.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. We had a couple other things on our list, right? What were we going to talk about?
Yeah. I think the last thing I have on my list is how the House is going to vote on the Marriage Equality Act, I believe is what it's called.
Is it Respect for Marriage? It's something like that.
Respect,
yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Respect for Marriage. And yeah, they're going to. So basically, Leif, you kind of were talking about this earlier. Do you want to give like what you know?
Kind of. Wasn't it supposed to like solidify that same sex codify that same sex and interracial marriage would be a constant in the law, right?
Yeah, basically. I seem to remember talking about this with you last time you were on. I think this was like when it was like originally being proposed.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's crazy. But yeah, it's right now we have that right protected by a Supreme Court case, Obergefell v. Hodges. But the Supreme Court has kind of signaled that they're willing to overturn precedents like that. I think Obergefell was specifically mentioned in one of the concurring opinions in Roe v. Wade by, I think, Justice Thomas.
Yes.
Who wanted to overturn it. So Congress is basically saying, we'll protect that right federally. So even if Supreme Court overturns the case, it's still protected.
Yeah, and Dobbs v. Jackson is when Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas was talking about how maybe next we should look into interracial marriage and same-sex marriage, which is really interesting because Justice Thomas himself is in an interracial marriage. So yeah. I don't really know why he would say that, but I'm really, really, really glad that they Congress has taken this seriously and has even I think there was about 40, not that this should be celebrated, but there were 47 Republicans, I believe, who voted or who have pledged that they will vote with the Democrats on this bill in the House. So that is like one step closer.
Yeah,
it's also interesting. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
There were like 10 in the Senate that voted for it, which is like just enough to get past the filibuster.
Yeah,
it's crazy. There are like 40 members of the Senate that just don't think that you should protect gay marriage federally. Like,
no. Well, it was also funny about not funny, but ironic about that is, again, I think we talked about this maybe back in July, but a lot of those people are, again, like in interracial marriages. And I think that they don't realize like it's protecting both interracial marriage and same-sex marriage. So I just think it's really interesting that they're so against it when it does affect them at the end of the day as well.
Yeah. I think their argument is that the Supreme Court already protects it, so it's essentially like superfluous. But if it's superfluous, why not just vote for it and move on?
I mean, that's what a lot of people said about Roe v. Wade. And look what happened.
Yeah.
I mean, that's at least in my opinion. You had the justices in their confirmation hearing say that they would not overturn it, that it was Supreme Court precedent, and look what happened. So I feel like you can't take the risk after knowing that marriage equality.
Yeah. Yeah. The Supreme Court can't make gay marriage illegal. They can only just say that states can make it illegal if they want. But if it's federally protected, then states can't do much because of the Supremacy Clause, baby.
Yeah. It's just really scary. I think that it's like we're in a modern time and they still want to vote on these issues. I know, again, like they can't make them illegal, but they can allow states to make them illegal. Or put laws restricting a lot of these issues, and I just don't think that's right, especially because we're in a time right now where we should be working towards more unity and togetherness in terms of trying to include everybody in society and trying to make sure that a lot of people who have been historically oppressed and face a lot of prejudice and racism have the same rights as everybody else. And the fact that they're trying to go back on a lot of other issues is it's really scary. They're almost taking advantage of it to take us more far back in time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So. All right. Any last topics or closing thoughts?
I mean, other than that, I noticed that, I keep up with a lot of, economic news and all that stuff. So I've noticed that the S&P 500 is climbing after the absolute crash that I had in I think September to October, because Powell gave a speech and to all those big companies, and then all the stocks just decided to crash for a long time, but it's climbing up now, so that's good.
I also heard Fed said that they're gonna plan to stop raising interest rates soon, which is it's a good sign, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think that was all the topics I had on my list.
All right. Thank you all for tuning in. Hopefully we'll get back to a more regular schedule. And Sunset out.